You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on, Julianne Laurent and Stevie Nicol will be joining us to talk about those two 0-0 draws that we forced them to watch today. Another 0-0 draw between France and Portugal we'll be discussing with our guests who join us now. Frank Leboeuf, Stuart Robson and Don Hutchinson. But before we get to that game, boys, should we actually talk about a game in which there were goals? England coming from behind to defeat Belgium by 2-1. Robbo, Belgium ranked number one in the world, so that now means England are the best team on the planet.
Yeah, you'd like to think so, but if you watch the game closely, you'd realise that Belgium were the better team. They should have been 2-0 up. They had a goal disallowed, which I don't think should have been disallowed. They scored with a penalty, which should have been a penalty, and they got back into the game, England, by getting the penalty given to them, which was probably right. But over the course of the game, the team that had the better understanding of the shape, the team that had the better wing-backs, the team that had the better centre-forward, the team that had the better midfield player that was going to pass the ball, was Belgium. England did very well to get a good result out of it. But if you were looking forward to the European Championship, you would say that Belgium is still a better team than England.
What changed on in this game? Because first half, as Robbo says, it was all Belgium.
Well, only you can come out with that logic of obviously Belgium being ranked number one, then England beat them, so they're number one. I don't know. It wasn't a great game. I thought Belgium controlled it.
I was a bit serious, Don. I'm not an idiot.
I know that. You can come out with that logic. I know that. I don't know. I thought for the first 45 minutes, Belgium were in second or third gear. I thought they were absolutely cruising. The Carrasco goal, in my opinion, probably should have stood. That was borderline whether that was on or offside. And Lukaku was easily the best player on the pitch for the first 45 minutes. And then second half, England played a little bit higher up the pitch. They squeezed it a little bit more. They stopped Belgium from playing through the lines. Declan Rice was, I thought, brilliant in the second half. But there wasn't much between the sides. And I think in a real game, in a competitive game, you know, don't forget, Belgium were without four or five of their main hitters, and so were England as well. But I think it was played like a friendly watching that second half.
Frank?
I agree with Don. I think it was more a friendly game in the second half, and we even saw Lukaku having fun at the end of the game just after losing for the national team. So I think the Boston didn't take it seriously. I mean, it's hard to judge the players where they just came back from a big pandemic for a different schedule, and now they just started the Premier League or their own championship, and they don't really concern about the national league as we can see as a real tournament. So it's hard to judge them, even if we have to do it. And I would say that I was disappointed by the first half of England, even if in the second half they were more concerned about working, especially defensively. I don't agree with Robbo. I think it was normal that the first goal was disallowed by the referee for Belgium because I think Castagne was blinding the goalkeeper, and it's why he was named offside. But at the end of the day, I found Belgium better overall than England. But if Belgium is what they should today, named the best team in the world right now, or the best team in Europe right now, we are far from contending me, you know, in that matter, because I found the game boring overall.
Yeah, and it adds a little bit, Robert, to a long list. And is this just an inevitable consequence of teams and players? Obviously, they haven't spent any time together. Players who haven't really had a pre-season. The quality right across the board from seals, like all these matches I've been watching, have been well below average.
Yeah, I would agree with you, some of those reasons that you mentioned. But I also think there aren't, at the moment, any outstanding teams in world football. I'm talking about international football, not club football. You know, I did Spain against Switzerland, and Spain are struggling. They haven't got a centre-forward. There's nobody that can play up front for them. I would say the same about France, which we're going to get onto. Then you look at Calvert-Lewin. I know Kane didn't start the game, but Calvert-Lewin, the centre-forward for England. You know, so there's a lot of teams that I think are very average at the moment. Even Belgium, with some of the players they had playing today, aren't, you wouldn't say they were top-class players. They're very good players, but they're not world-class players. And that's why Belgium weren't able to overcome England today.
Well, but Belgium should be better than what we've seen of them, surely. You take a look at the quality, Don, and not just judging them on this game, but just overall throughout these previous tournaments. You kind of think, right, Roberto Martinez at the helm, they should be going into this tournament as one of the favourites, which they are. So I'm not quite sure which point I'm trying to make here. I'm just trying to strengthen this segment a little longer, Don.
Good luck.
Listen. I thought there were signs of Belgium in the first 45, but you know, when you looked at their starting 11, no Courtois. You know, Castiles is trying to push him for a number one berth. Hazard brothers weren't playing. Dries Mertens weren't playing. So it wasn't full strength. So it was, and I think what we're seeing with the Nations League, I'm not a massive fan of it. I must admit, I think players are playing in it to try and get, you know, a bit more exposure and trying to get their, you know, performances to a certain level. But I don't see it as being competitive football just yet. That's why you watch the Euros, you watch the World Cup. I disagree slightly with Rob. I think teams will come to the fore. I think teams like France and Belgium and Germany, the normal suspects, will come and look good sides at the moment. You know, managers are not necessarily picking their best players because, as Robbo just said there, he said, you know, domestic football's just around the corner again. We're only 2 or 3 weeks into domestic season. So it's hard for managers to try and pick their full strength size and go at it toe-to-toe football. So that's why I think you're seeing a lot of, you know, boring games.
Should we continue this extremely strong segment by reflecting on France's 0-0 draw against Portugal? Frank Leboeuf used to play for France. What do you think?
Well, you know, because you have Mbappe in one side and Ronaldo in another side, you may think that, oh, we're going to see goals. And but you have defences. And the two defences have been absolutely spot on today, especially the Portuguese one. They work very hard together. Even Ronaldo came back and tried to defend and help his teammates. But on both sides, we saw almost no chance to score, like maybe two or three chances on each side. I think you had 10 goals, 10 shots from each side and three chances on target, but nothing dangerous, maybe one from Ronaldo at the end. But the defenses were very, very good. So it was a better game to watch than, I would say, England and Belgium, the first half. And it got boring as well, the second half. Like, the players don't want to take a risk. They want to make sure they're going to go back to their club fit enough to go back to their own championship and also for the Champions League, who's going to start.
I thought the tempo was a bit higher than we saw in the England-Belgium game, certainly in the first half, Robbo.
It was, and I thought, and I agree with Frank, that some of the defending was excellent. That was world-class. Kimpembe, you know, was excellent throughout. You looked at the two centre-halves. Pepe, we know, is getting old, but he still defended really well. I thought Conte, again, in midfield, made sure that Bruno Fernandes had to go into other areas. But I was disappointed with both sides. When the ball, when you look at the sides, if you've got playing with Giroud up front, you need to get crosses into the box. But they had no width. Front. So the only people that were going to get forward were the fullbacks. Pavard didn't play particularly well. Hernandez, I did think, played well, but didn't get enough crosses into the box. And at the other end, the system with the diamond that France were playing, the way to get attacks going for Portugal was switching the play, getting their fullbacks high up the field and getting crosses in for Ronaldo. But they didn't do that, and that's why there weren't too many chances, along with some brilliant defending by both teams.
We saw flashes, didn't we, from Portugal early on, Don?
Yeah, I think so. There was a brilliant tackle. I mean, Man City fans will love the tackle from Ruben Diaz and the elbow to Olivier Giroud in the first seconds of the game, which cut the Frenchman. So he was very good, not just because of that, but he showed his steel.
Is that a good thing to do? Does that make you a good defender, whacking someone in the head and cutting their head open?
Of course it does. Of course it does. It's 1v1 battles. You've got to win your 1v1 battles before you concentrate on 11v11. And I just think for Man City fans wondering what type of player Ruben Diaz is.
Dirty.
He went straight. No, he was dirty in the first minute. He got a yellow card for it. After that, you know, we've seen a patched up Olivier Giroud, never really got into the game. And he was checking his shoulders every couple of minutes because Diaz was really, really tight on him. So for Man City fans, they'll enjoy watching his defending.
What else from this game, Frank?
Well, Ruben Diaz, I will remind more the tackle that he did on Mbappe in the second half than the elbow that he did on Giroud. But it's true that he had a very good game. What can I say? I enjoy keeping the two central defenses. I think they work very hard and they understood each other very well. Nothing much to say. I mean, we barely saw Mbappe. We barely saw Ronaldo. And attacking wise, you know, I'm fed up to see France showing their skill just in counter-attack. They are not able of leading the game, getting the position of the ball, changing the pace of the game, and with the players that they have in front, they should be able to do that. But they keep on keeping the ball and not doing anything at the end of the day. Not crossing the ball, nothing happens. You know, Griezmann, I mean, it's getting very hard for him. I mean, he's struggling with the national team, but he also struggles with Barcelona, and it's very concerned, and I'm very concerned about his future with the national team if he keeps on doing that. Paul Pogba, we can talk about Paul Pogba. Not very good first half, very good second half, maybe the best French player in the second half, getting fit, and maybe we found the appetite coming back from Paul Pogba. So maybe a positive aspect of that game today, Paul Pogba.
Overall, we discussed it quite a bit. Robin, we may as well get your opinion on Paul Pogba, obviously coming out and saying that Real Madrid is still the dream. Hasn't put in the sort of performances that Manchester United expected when they paid that record transfer. What do you think?
I thought he did okay today. I thought he was quite powerful. He was the one player in midfield that when he got the ball, he started to run forward with it, breaking beyond defenders. The problem was, as he was breaking forward, and Frank just mentioned it, Griezmann was then going behind him, so he didn't have a forward pass. Giroud wasn't making the right sort of runner, and Mbappe was out wide at times. So the movement in front of Paul Pogba when he was running with the ball wasn't quite good enough. But I was quite impressed with his dynamism, the way he was getting forward with the ball at times, his work rate, particularly in that second half. And I thought he worked well alongside Conte.
What about overall at United, Robbo?
He's never really at United played at his very best. When I saw him play for Juventus, I thought he was the best midfield player in the world. There wasn't a game where he didn't affect it in some way or the other. And I expected him to do exactly the same at Manchester United. For some reason, either his confidence isn't quite there, his appetite isn't quite there, the manager doesn't get the best out of him. Whatever it is, he's never been the same player at Manchester United that I saw at Juventus and when I've seen him play at his very best for France.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. A lot more from the boys over on our YouTube channel where they're answering your tweets. Be sure to check it out.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Also on Sunday, it finished. The Netherlands 0, Bosnia-Herzegovina 0, Poland 0, Italy 0. Julianne Laurent, Stevie Nicol here to reflect on those thrillers. Stevie, just tell us about the latest matches you've been watching.
Oh my goodness. Listen, I watched Scotland the other day and it was 90 minutes in extra time, it was 0-0. And then I watched these two today and they were both 0-0s. I mean, is it me? Am I a jinx? Is that what it is?
I think it definitely is you, Stevie, or international football is shocking at the moment. You did say, out of everything, Italy the brightest?
Yes. Yeah, yes, they didn't score a goal, but they deserve to. Some of their play, you know, they try and go forward. They don't pass the ball around for the sake of passing it. I just like the way they go about it. And I think if they had swapped centre-forwards, if Lewandowski had been playing for Italy today, not Belotti, then I think they would have won this game comfortably. As I said, I like the way they play. They like to get forward quickly. There's nice, neat, short passes. Verratti and Jorginho. I mean, when was the last time you heard me saying how well Jorginho played? But him and Verratti were fantastic in the middle of the park. So, yes, it was a 0-0. Poland struggled a little bit, to be honest. But I was impressed. I was impressed with the way Italy went about it.
Do you agree, Jules?
Yeah, completely. I think they have a lot of energy. It's a very young team. And I think if they had a bit more composure in the final third, especially the last pass or those chances, I think they had 16 shots in total, but only two on target. And towards right at the end, Moise Kean did really good on the left-hand side, and then his cross is just a little bit, I think, behind. I think Belotti was, or one of the other forwards, and it's just another chance that went missing for Italy. But I'm like Stevie. I like the way they go forward. I like all that energy. They always try to play, and again, it's a working process, and they will learn from a game like tonight and winning next time. But I think there's certainly a lot of promises in the way they play and some of the performances we've seen tonight.
Meanwhile, for the Dutch, Frank de Boer's second game in charge, and he's still waiting to see his team score a goal, Stevie.
Oh, my goodness. It was desperate. Listen, it could have been so different. De Vrij had a header in the fifth minute from the middle of the goal, 6 yards out. Should have scored, no question. And had he scored, then we might have been talking about a different game. But from there, it was downhill. I mean, they couldn't break Bosnia down. They had plenty of possession. In fact, Bosnia on the break made them look a little vulnerable. A little thing here with, like, Van Dijk with Liverpool is in charge of his line, and today the Dutch had a couple of problems with their line as well. So I'm thinking there could be a common denominator here. But anyway, for the Dutch, nothing, absolutely nothing till what, maybe 15 minutes to go, when the Bosnians were beginning to run out of steam. And they just ended up putting the ball in the box. Listen, Van Dijk ended up being, 30 years ago, in the last couple of minutes, you'd put your centre-back as centre-forward. That's exactly what the Dutch did, and that kind of sums them up. That's how desperate they were. They had Van Dijk playing centre-forward, trying to win headers and knockdowns. So, yeah, it was absolutely desperate for the Dutch. They got a point. They probably deserved a point, because Bosnia weren't particularly good, but I'll tell you, it was a long 90 minutes watching it.
Why is Van Dijk's game falling apart, Stevie? What's happened?
I just think he's too high. I think, listen, when you're defending a line, it's all about percentages. And right now, he's pulling everybody up far too high. It's as simple as that, Dan. You know, sometimes it's always good to try and get things perfect, right? I don't have a problem with that, but when you're gambling, that's just going over the line. I think with Liverpool, he's probably 5 yards too high, and I think today he was doing the same thing with the Dutch back line, because the Bosnians got in, I mean, probably four times between the first and second half, and this made them look a little vulnerable. It just smacked of what's going on at Liverpool just now.
Memphis Depay suspended for this game. Jules, does that offer Frank de Boer an excuse?
I think what offered Frank de Boer an excuse is that he's not a very good manager, full stop. I mean, I was never keen.
That's not really an excuse, is it? That's an indictment.
Well, no, but like, you know, it's just I watched them play today and I'm like, well, it's not surprising for me, because, you know, he's not very good. I don't know how Donny van de Beek doesn't come on in a game like this when it's 0-0 against Bosnia, who, like Stevie said, running out of steam. Why don't you put van de Beek for the last 20 minutes? He's exactly the kind of player that could help you in a game like this if you just stop hoofing the ball in, because that's what he did. I think there are 28 crosses. 28 crosses on Luke de Jong, and then in the end, Virgil van Dijk. I mean, this is not the way Holland play. They've never played like that. And it's not just because Memphis was missing, and he's a big miss. Of course he is, because he's been so important for them in that sort of false number nine role. But just hoofing the ball, that's not Dutch football, you know, for you. And I just don't understand it. And I thought it was so disappointing. And again, for me, De Boer is just not the right guy for that job. It's as easy as that.
Stevie, are you as harsh on De Boer?
Well, I would say no, but the truth is that you get the feeling everywhere he goes, it's the same old story. You know, he's been jumping around from team to team, and everybody kind of, he never seems to stick anywhere. And he's only, what, two games in, and already people are criticising the way the team's playing. I mean, so it's hard to argue with the facts that the guy doesn't get it done, does he?
Meanwhile, let's talk about a game that there was goals. Erling Haaland with his first international hat-trick as Norway beat Romania 4-0. Three very different goals, Stevie. I thought the third in particular was exceptional.
Yeah, and what I like about the third one is it tells you all about him, because the first goal, he's tried to measure a little ball in the near post under the keeper. And that tells you he's thinking. And the third one, I'll miss the second one out, because Ali Moreno would have scored that from 12 inches, sorry. But the third one, it's all about power, but it's a ball that's running away from him. He's got the agility to get his feet in the right place to get round it and get it on target, but he still gets an incredible amount of pace on it. So this guy could score all kinds of goals. You know, he's not just a blaster. The third one, he blasted it, but it was measured. And as I said, the first one, that ended up going under the keeper and actually got a touch on the keeper. But he was thinking exactly what he was doing and how he was going to go about it. I mean, the guy's absolute class, no question.
Jules, you were saying before we were recording, where was this against Serbia?
Yeah, only, I mean, you're going to get me in trouble with all the Norwegian people and our friend Jana Gafjortov. It's just, I would have loved to see Erling Haaland and Martin Odegaard at the Euros this summer, or at least into that playoff final, had they beaten Serbia. Didn't happen for them. I think they will learn a lot from it. It was maybe they were a bit too young as a team altogether, and Haaland and Odegaard, especially for those kind of occasions. And maybe Serbia had a bit more experience then to go and win that semi-final of the playoffs. But just think what Norway can have with Haaland and Odegaard for the next 15 years almost. And it's quite scary, because they're going to get better and they're going to get more and more used to play with each other. And we saw obviously a bit tonight, it was against Romania, and, you know, no offence, but still, the future is really bright for this Norwegian team. And I just would have liked to see them in the Euros, because I think Haaland at the Euros would have been fun.
That tone has changed. The French Revolution is taking over the Gab and Jules podcast. Gab is away. Frank LeBeuf will be joining Jules, Stuart Robson as well. Be sure to check out the latest episode when it drops on Monday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Plans to shake up the Premier League have gone down very badly. This is the back page of The Star. Revolting, The Mirror, Uncivil War. Meanwhile, The Guardian's headline, Football at War. The Times saying fury at Big Six power grab. So what is this Project Big Picture all about? Will the Premier League be reduced to 18 teams? Two Premier League sides will be relegated. The top two Championship sides will be promoted. There will be a playoff between the third, fourth and fifth place sides in the Championship and the 16th place team in the Premier League. League Cup gone, Community Shield gone. This is what the Premier League had to say about these proposals. A number of the individual proposals in the plan published today could have a damaging impact on the whole game, and we are disappointed to see that Rick Parry, the chair of the EFL, has given his on-the-record support. The Premier League has been working in good faith with its club and the EFL to seek a resolution to the requirement for COVID-19 rescue funding. This work will continue. Right, Julian Laurent, from the Daily Telegraph's report, this has all come from Manchester United and Liverpool. Basically, what people want to know is there any chance of this actually happening?
I think it's very unlikely, Dan, simply because, as it is the case right now, for the Premier League to vote for something, they will need 14 of the 20 clubs to vote in favour. And apart from those nine clubs that you mentioned, the top six, obviously the two clubs in Manchester, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea and Tottenham, plus the other three, which are the other three that have been the longest in the Premier League, Everton, Southampton and West Ham, they're currently the top nine clubs. But you struggle to see, they will vote four, obviously, but you struggle to see any other five clubs from the other 11 voting in favour of this, because obviously that would give, as some of the headlines are saying, a lot of power, pretty much all the power to the top six, especially because of those top nine clubs, only six of those nine votes would be enough for the Premier League to vote for something, which is could be from vetoing the takeover of a club by someone, of passing, you know, other changes that they want, and basically the top six could do whatever they want and could pass some rules and laws and changes that is very much in their favour and not in everybody else's favour. So I don't think it's likely that those top six and top nines will find any other ally, if you want, from the Premier League to vote for this new reform.
What you say makes complete sense, Jules. So why did Liverpool and United believe that maybe the clubs would vote for this?
Because I think they probably counting on the fact that the clubs from the Championship and League One and League Two will maybe put pressure, because they're in favour of this. Of course, we haven't heard so much yet about clubs from the Championship, but you would think that they would be in favour, like League One and League Two clubs, because that means more money for them coming in from the Premier League, no parachute payments anymore. You know, when a club comes down from the Premier League to the Championship, they come down with a lot of money, which obviously is a huge disfavour to the rest of the Championship and a huge favour for those clubs who've gone down. They were not good enough for the Premier League, and yet they come down back to the Championship with far more money than anybody else in the Championship, which gives them a big advantage to try to go back up straight away into the Premier League. So those are gone, and it'd be a far more fair share, if you want, of the money that comes down from the Premier League in the new format of the structure than it is currently now with the parachute payments. So maybe they think if the Championship and League One and League Two clubs are in favour of this new structure, then maybe that will force some of the Premier League clubs to vote in favour of it, even if that means, as we've been saying, giving a lot of the power to the top six clubs.
But if Luton Town call up Burnley, I don't quite understand what Luton Town would have on them to make them change their minds.
No, you're right, and that might not be enough. If you're Burnley right now, there's not much good in the new proposal, if you want, because you lose two clubs in the 20 current clubs in the Premier League, and that could one day be Burnley, for example, or another club like that. You also, you know, I guess the risk of coming back up is far less now because, mm-hmm. as we've seen in the Bundesliga and in Ligue 1, where you've got a playoff between the team that finished third from bottom in the top flight with the team from the second division, it's very often that the team from the top flight wins. Pretty much in the last few years, it was always the case, which means that from having three clubs automatically promoted to the Premier League from the Championship, you will have two certain of going up, but the third one very much against the odds, at least to coming up to the Premier League. So, you know, if you're the smaller club in the Premier League, surely you vote against this. There's no way clubs like Burnley will accept to, you know, that new proposal and the new format of the Premier League, and almost giving up their power. And because currently it's one club, one vote, and that would completely change in favour of the top six clubs. And for a club like Burnley, it makes no sense to be in favour of this.
Julian Laurent, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Stevie as well. Now, if you want more from Don, Robbo and Frank, be sure to stay tuned to Extra Time, where Don introduces us to a brand new German legend. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Look who's here. Don, Robbo, Frank LaBeouf. Don, we were talking before we get to the tweets, you were talking about Declan Rice, world class. Is he really, though? Isn't it just the fact that he's English? That's why people pay more attention to him. If he was from somewhere else, like he wasn't very good today in the game.
Don't say just because he's English that he's just overhyped. He is a different class. Every time I watch Declan Rice, I think,
why is no one bought him then?
Well, Chelsea are trying to buy him. They were going to spend £80 million on him. I think Michael Carrick when I watch him. I think Rolls-Royce when I watch him. I think he cruises through games.
Rolls-Royce, Frank? You own a Bentley? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd rather go for the Bentley. But, I mean, from what I saw today, it wasn't the best game from Rice, that's for sure. But if Don say this different class, we're going to give him a little trust, you know, and we're going to see that.
Hey, this is Don who said that West Ham would finish in the top to the four product. Last season. Let's not forget.
That's true.
Robbo, what do you think? Is it another case of overhyping an Englishman?
I think Declan Rice is a good player. I think he does that job well just in front of the back players, and he can go in, drop in to be a centre-half. I would question his quality on the ball, whether he can hit a long pass, whether he can play around pressure. He's a good player, but not a great player, in my view.
How much would Harry Maguire be if he wasn't English?
not smart, probably.
I don't want to answer to that.
OK, then. Considering his record, he's only lost 3 games in 47 matches. Has Roberto Martinez underachieved with the golden generation of Belgium? And do they need a different coach to take them to Euro 2021, World Cup 2022 glory? That's a bit of a weird question because he says how good his record is, but then I don't quite know what he means.
Yeah.
What did they do? Beat
Brazil? Did you send that one in, Dan?
I didn't send that in. No. Wait. No, I don't think so. But what? Beat Brazil in the World Cup, semi-finals, lost to who they lose in the semis? France. You can give him that.
I think he's done a decent job.
It's all right.
I think at the start of there, where it says he only lost 3 games in 47, that's not bad. He's assembling a squad that and you think can go close.
Robbo, you're not a fan of Roberto Martinez, no?
I've never said that, no. Roberto Martinez, I thought, struggled at times when he was Everton manager. But since he's been the Belgian manager, I think he's been good. I think he knows exactly what system he wants to play. I think he's done well with the team. He's got the best out of Lukaku again. He's got the best out of some very good players. And he's got the best out of average players as well to make them a very good side. So I think he's done a good job there.
Does Frank believe that...
I have something to say about Roberto Martinez. He worked for ESPN with us during 2016, you know, tournament in France. So he's part of our team. So nobody is allowed to say anything against Roberto Martinez.
Well, I think
exactly.
It's a team.
Right. Dan was trying to stir it up there. He was trying to cause a problem in case he works for us again.
See, that's a proper captain there, Frank. You stood by your man. Good captaincy, Frank.
Exactly.
I wasn't allowed to talk to him when he worked for us. Does Frank believe that come the European Championships next summer that Camavinga could potentially be a starter for France?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I was wondering, you know, how Pogba will behave in that game. He did pretty well, so I don't know. But I think alongside Kante, Camavinga has a chance to play. He's getting stronger and stronger, bigger and bigger, getting more experience. He's going to play the Champions League also with Rennes. I don't know how far they can go, but he's going to gain experiences like crazy for the next 3-4 months. So, you know, seeing the talent that he already has and what he can get on top of it, yes, big chances.
What kind of training happens at club level for those who aren't on international duty? I suppose, Frank, you were on international duty. Don, you as well, when you decided to play for Scotland.
Johnny. absolute jolly up.
Yeah, just a jolly up. Nothing happens. Yeah.
No, nothing happens. Little short, five sides.
Yeah.
Bits and bobs, little bits of head tennis. Keep yourself ticking over.
Right.
Lots of massages, nice food. Just keep ticking over till the big boys come back.
Nice. Same experience for you, Robbo?
Yeah, same experience. I mean, when I was very young, I was in the under-18s and the under-21s and went with the England squad on several occasions. But there were times where there might be four of us left at Arsenal. And we just did some technical work. We did a lot of shooting with the goalkeeper, and it was good fun.
Nice.
And as Don said, lots of food as well.
Oh, that's a priority. Okay. Many ex-players and managers have stories about how they saw a young player at training and knew he would be a top player. Who was that young player for you, and did he make it to the top? Frank, please think of someone else other than John Terry.
All right, tough question if I can't say John Terry. I would say I played against Frank Lampard when he was playing for West Ham, and I have to say that I had a discussion with Christophe Dugarry about sometimes that you think you know about football and you are ready to bet that somebody's going to be a big star and somebody's going to be average. And I would have put a penny on Frank Lampard seeing him playing for West Ham.
Right.
And I swear, it's really surprised me like crazy. He's been a fantastic player. He's a legend at Chelsea, but he was far from there when he was playing for West Ham. And I'm glad that he got me wrong.
There's that great clip of Harry Redknapp that's gone viral of him defending Frank Lampard when he was much younger. It was like a fan Q&A just saying that it was basically nepotism. He was only playing Lampard because of the family link. But in the end, I suppose Redknapp was right, boys. What do you reckon? Robbo, for you, someone you saw at training?
Yeah, it wasn't with Arsenal, it was actually with England Youth. And there was a player called Mark Walters, who was at Aston Villa as a youngster. He was one of the best dribblers that I have ever seen, and he was outstanding. And he went and played for Aston Villa, he then went to Liverpool, he played for Rangers as well. But he never actually played for England, so he didn't quite fulfil his potential. But as a young player, he was always going to be a player that was going to make it in the Premier League, or as it was then, the First Division.
Don, did you play with him? He scored in the FA Cup final, didn't he, against Sunderland?
Yeah, I played with Mark at Liverpool. We had loads of young kids coming through at the time. People like Steve McManaman, Jamie Redknapp, Robbie Fowler. My one is... when I was coming back from a major knee surgery, I spent 6 weeks at Bayern Munich with Dr. Müller-Wohlfahrt, and there was an 11v11 practice game going on, and the doc pulled me to one side and he went, keep an eye on this youngster. He went, he's playing out of position in this practice game, he's playing on the right wing, but it'd be one of Germany's best ever midfield players, and he was outstanding, and that kid was Sebastian Schweinsteiger.
Ooh.
Mind you, you just dismissed Mark Walters there, Don. But what was wrong with Mark Walters? You just dismissed him.
I'd like to think if we were playing top trumps, I think Sebastian Schweinsteiger just about tops.
Yeah, wait a moment. Was Sebastian Schweinsteiger Bastian Schweinsteiger's brother?
Yes, Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Oh my God.
Schweinsteiger. Schweiny.
Schweiny.
Okay. Which of these records will be more difficult to be repeated by an English club? Right, concentrate, Frank. Manchester City's 100 points. Manchester United's treble winning side, or Arsenal's Invincibles?
I would say Manchester United treble. That's going to be very hard.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, very hard. I think the only point, you know, one, yeah, Liverpool almost did it.
Right.
Arsenal Invincible, I think it's Liverpool who almost did it. So it's quite possible. But the treble.
Liverpool didn't almost do it. They came short, didn't they? They lost against Watford. There were still quite a few games to go.
Yeah, true. But I mean, you can fall, you know, one game, one day, and it's over. No, I don't know. I think getting the treble, it's really, really difficult. And because on top of it, you have so many big clubs now, and that it is a big fight at the top. At the time Manchester won the Premier League, it was Arsenal and Manchester United. So
as opposed to now, where it's Liverpool or Manchester City.
Well, we don't know now. We don't know now. We can see that Liverpool is is ready to lose against Aston Villa 7-2, if I'm correct. So everything is possible this season. So it's going to be hard for anybody to get a treble.
Robbo, which is hardest?
Oh, winning the treble. If the treble is the Champions League, the FA Cup and the Premier League, that's the hardest thing by a mile. Then I would go with 100 points and then Arsenal's invincible team because I think Nottingham Forest went 42 games without losing, so I'm going to go for that.
Anti-Wenger continues. Robbo, if it was that easy, why has no one else done it?
Arsenal. They started playing for draws in the end because they wanted that invincibility tag.
Wow. God, it's deep, isn't it, Don? It's deep.
Oh, you can see it.
He has a point.
He's getting redder and redder. Look at his face. Look, his deep roots.
Don, what do you think?
I think I'd have to agree with the boys. I was going to go Invincibles, but
hang on. You just had a go at me, and now you're going to agree with me.
Yeah, but you put Arsenal last. Being invincible is harder than getting 100 points, I would imagine. And Stevie Nicholls won the treble, by the way, for Liverpool back in the 80s.
Don.
Says a lot.
Don. What's the latest insight on Frank's preferred attack when their season resumes? Will Ziyech be fit to play soon?
Got no insight, Dan. I've sent him 1,000 texts over the last end, and he's blanking me for fun. All because of this show.
Oh,
before I was on this show,
exactly.
Texting back super quick.
Yep.
Now, kiboshed.
Because you're associated with Stuart Robson. That's what it does for you.
You, Dan Thomas, you. You're a troublemaker, Thomas.
All right. Did you guys like making two-footed tackles? Do you think the game's gone soft?
Yes.
Did you like a good two-footed challenge?
That was the best part of the game.
Yeah.
Well, who was sent off most? It's probably you, Don, isn't it? You were sent off most.
Six, I think. I've seen Frank do some naughty ones.
How many times you sent off, Don? Six times.
Six, I think.
Robbo?
Well, I
was sent off once. Against Spurs. I failed the right person, Graham Roberts.
Whoa.
Double foot tackle over the top.
Wow.
It was on Boxing Day.
And what about you, Frank?
I think I was sent off more than 10 times.
Wow. Blimmin' heck. Almost as much as Zidane.
Yeah, because I was always late. No, but it's funny that a guy like Marcel Desailly was incapable of tackling. The guy was so strong that he was staying on his feet, but he didn't know how to tackle. He never tackled in his life, I think.
Yeah, but you preluded that story by the fact that you were sent off 10 times, which suggests that you didn't know how to tackle either.
No, I tackle, but you take a risk when you tackle, and I haven't been sent off always because of a tackle. I've been sent off because I insulted the ref, because I put a handball on the line, you know, for different things, you know. When you tackle, it's a skill. When you can see forwards when they tackle, it's very dangerous. They can break a leg. We know how to tackle. We used to tackle, and we know how to protect even the striker when we tackle him. We know how to put him in danger as well.
If there was VAR, Don, how many times would you have been sent off?
I don't know, Dan, but I've just Googled Bastian Schweinsteiger's name and you are correct. It is Bastian, not Sebastian.
I can't believe you had to Google that, Don.
I had to just for my own clarity because I thought I was hoping I was going to catch you out and I'd be right and you were wrong.
How did that work out?
You were right and I was wrong.
Yes. Who is the fastest player that you've ever played against? Robbo?
The quickest in terms of brain and foot was Ian Rush when he played centre forward. When he made darting runs over the first 10 yards, he was electric. So I would say Ian Rush.
Don?
I got asked to man mark Prozhinevsky once, and he is certainly not the fastest. He is one of the slowest I've ever marked. But it has to be Henri.
Why would you start a story like that?
Because I just wanted to go the opposite. It's our type of show, isn't it? I wanted to get Prozhinevsky in because he was a genius, but he couldn't move.
Right.
And then I wanted to get Henri in because he was the fastest.
And that's the answer to the question.
Henri.
And finally, Frank Leboeuf.
I have to agree with Don. Henri, I was hesitating between Henry and Anelka, and you have to add also Shevchenko. I played against Milan when Shevchenko was at his best in Milan. I mean, impossible to catch as well. But Henry was so powerful that I have to put Henry first.
That's it then. Thank you very much to Stuart Robson, to Frank LeBeuf, to Don Hutchinson, to Sebastian Schweinsteiger. We will be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.